Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning. Hello. Welcome back. Make yourself at home. Come on in. Grab a seat. Or stand, if you prefer. Whatever you're doing. Whatever's most comfortable. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The one and only campus community radio station way up here at the very tippity top of Burnaby Mountain. SFU's Burnaby campus, where we are situated and broadcast from the ancestral and unceded lands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here sharing culture and gathering and living and building relationships and just being here since time immemorial, since a time long before any of us or our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents can even remember. And as we occupy these spaces and live in this beautiful place with a long and storied history and tradition of human culture, it's important to remember how lucky we are and how blessed we are to be in this place and to be, for myself, an uninvited guest in these places, in this place. And I try to keep that in mind with everything I do here. Today on the program, a bunch of stuff. Well, actually, less stuff than usual, I guess. I have a interview that I did with Henry Jung, who is the creator of 360 Riot Walk, which is a interactive guided tour, walking tour, about the 1907 anti-Asian riots in Vancouver, which, you know, ties a lot into what I was talking about, the history of this place and the occupation of this land and whose land it is and who believes, who various people and groups believe the land belongs to or belonged to. So we'll get to that. That's, you know, an ongoing thing, the 360 Riot Walk, but it is being presented in the coming days, about 10 days from now, as part of the Eastside Arts Festival, which runs from July 19th to something. Sorry, let me pull this up. From the 18th to the 27th, so starting next Friday, and then going for a full week more. Going from Friday until the following Sunday at venues across the east side of Vancouver. So we'll get into that and maybe a little bit more depending on where things take us. It is about a half hour long interview where Henry and I get into both the tour itself, but we talk about the 1907 anti-Asian riots, which are a big part of Vancouver's history and even Canada's history, as we get into, but not all that well known. So that's interesting, and I know you'll enjoy it and probably be inspired to go do the walking tour, which you can either do on your own with a tablet or smartphone or other sort of browser-enabled and internet-enabled device, or you can sign up to go on a walking tour led by Henry with a tablet and headphones provided next weekend on the 19th and 20th, which you can do at eastsideartsfest.ca, or you can on Eventbrite look up the 360 Riot Walk. Anyway, we'll get back to all of that and provide you with some more information. We are going to start, as we almost always do, with a little bit of local music, and I think the theme right now for the first The first track or two that we'll hear over this hour is live music. It is, you know, there's live music year-round, of course, in this city, in these cities. There's always a lot going on. As Jacob, host of the Arts Show here on CJSF, Thursday evenings at 5 o'clock, will always attest to. He's got a sheet here from last week with a whole list of shows. I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 shows over a four-day span last week. But the summer is inevitably a little bit busier because you get the outdoor shows and the festivals and all sorts of things. Last weekend was Catalano, which I attended. And if you'd listen to this coming week's episode of the Vancouver Mixtape, you might hear some recordings from my time there and some musings and reflections. But there's also this Eastside Arts Festival, which has some live music components. There's the Pleasant Days Festival, which is new this year on Main Street at the end of the month, beginning of August. All sorts of stuff. So there's always so much live music. So why not share a little bit of that with you now? We're going to hear from Worrywart, which is a band I've played here before. My friend Riley is in this band, former coworker, and well, there's a couple former coworkers in this band, but that's not, I was going to say that's not why I like them. That's not the only reason I like them. They also make really great, amazing music. And they put out a record, I guess it would have been last October-ish. Yeah, called Hail Mary Baby, that I listened to for the first time while I was in Dundas visiting my grandparents. And while I was in Ontario visiting my sister and husband-in-law and nephew and brand new baby niece at that point. And then I zipped from London to Dundas, which is not that far, to visit my grandparents. And I went on a walk one evening and listened to Hail Mary Baby and was blown away. Really great songwriting and performances and just impeccable vibes. And so when I heard that there was a new Worrywart record called Faster, Slower, Live, I was very excited. So in February of 2024, which is already over a year ago, Worrywart made a live album reimagining their studio recordings into a raucous performance of the whole record at a concert that didn't exist. They performed this at Green Auto with no audience, live from the floor, and it's great and fun. They say if Hail Mary Baby was boiling down thousands of minutes down to hundreds, Faster, Slower, Live is an attempt to bring it down to 40. So we're going to listen to the attempt. This track by Worrywart, excuse me, originally from the record Hail Mary Baby, now live from Faster, Slower, Live. This is Pretty.
There's a girl on my screen, much too worn out to speak sweetly, just revolving back around from the corner to her slimy black eyelid, interior so open and closed. Beyond that is a crack on the foot with a tepid soft airflow that's drying those eyelids and evoking feelings as strange when remembering that that word just used to be a plan for our future. And life's kind of funny, I guess. She thinks she's pretty, and she turning blind. I'm not asking for a kiss. I just think it'd be remiss not to mention that it was nice to be a diesel for a bit.
Please enjoy 30 Seconds of Nature, brought to you by Ducks Unlimited Canada. Learn how you can experience nature in your community at ducks.ca.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thanks to ducks.ca for that delightful little nature break. And thanks to Worrywart for the track Pretty Live from Faster Slower Live by Worrywart, which you can find on Bandcamp right now at worrywart.bandcamp.com. Worrywart. Worrywart. They rock. They're great. And now we are going to get to my interview with Henry Jung. This, as I mentioned, is in relation to his project, the 360 Degree Riot Walk, which is about the 1907 anti-Asian riots in Vancouver. It's a sort of augmented reality walking tour, which you can go walk through Chinatown and other parts of Vancouver's east side with a smartphone and some headphones and see historical elements and all sorts of cool stuff. We talk about the nitty-gritty of the tour in the interview, so I'll let Henry speak to that as he knows better than I do, although I have played around and walked around a little bit, and it's really cool, heartily endorsed. If you're interested in doing the tour, you can yourself just go to 360riotwalk.ca, 360riotwalk.ca, and click launch the tour, and it'll walk you through all the steps. Or if you want a more guided version of that, you can go to eastsideartsfest.ca and just click on the buy tickets button for either the July 19th or July 20th in-person hosted 360 Riot Walk, which will be led by Henry and includes a walk through the tour and then a guided post-tour reflection. That's $23.76 for that. So, without further ado, those are being presented as part of the Eastside Arts Festival, which, as I mentioned, runs from July 18th to 27th at venues across the Eastside Arts District, including McLean Park and a bunch of other places. You can find more info at eastsideartsfest.ca, as well as links to buy tickets for the 360 Degree Riot Walk and other ticketed events as part of Eastside Arts Fest. There's a bunch of free stuff as well, so check it out. And for now, here is our conversation.
I'm Henry Jung, and I'm the creator of 360 Riot Walk, a 360 video walking tour of the 1907 anti-Asian riots in Vancouver.
And can you describe where we are right now?
We are at stop number 7, Shanghai Alley, which once was the heart of Chinatown. Now it's really tucked away, surrounded by concrete, and the only reason anyone would come right here nowadays is to go to the nursing home.
Why do you think that is?
Redevelopment. How... You know what? I don't actually know the history of the decline of Shanghai Alley, Canton Alley, Suzhou Alley. It was a ghetto, and you know, that term's pretty loaded, but in many ways it's pretty indicative of how Chinese and other non-white folks were relegated to very specific geographic areas of Vancouver because they were basically allowed to live elsewhere. So a few blocks to the east, you have where the Japanese Canadians lived, Hall Street area. You have where South Asians, mostly Punjabis, lived in this area because they also weren't allowed to live in other parts of the city. The black folks mostly lived around Hogan's Alley, which is also a few blocks from here. The specifics around the decline of this area, specifically here, and how the rest of Chinatown did flourish along Well, Powell Street actually included, but mostly Pender and Main around there. So way back when in 1907, Main Street used to be called Westminster Avenue. Pender Street used to be called DuPont.
Obviously, without knowing the specific histories, it is pretty easy to sort of speculate and see how the way that Chinatown, Japantown, as you're saying, sort of the South Asian community and the black communities in the area have been either neglected or sort of willfully treated as an afterthought in terms of development and urban building.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it goes right back to the very founding of the city. One of the first things that the city passed after the Great Fire was to keep the Chinese from rebuilding what had been burned down. One of the very first acts of British Columbia when it became a province and joined Canada was to immediately pass a law taking away the vote from Indigenous and Chinese people. So, yeah, that kind of discrimination, that willful policy making of exclusion, of taking away rights, of just making life more difficult for, first of all, the Indigenous folks, and then other people who came to try to eke out a living out here. Yeah, that's been a long-term strategy. Not everyone was white nationalist, but it certainly was part of the whole makeup of nation-building in Canada, because the White Canada movement was pretty much hand-in-hand with the founding of Canada, British Columbia, Vancouver, etc. It'd be nice to think that that era is long and gone, but it keeps rearing its head. There's a long tradition of racism in these parts and in Canada. It's going to take a long time for us as a nation, us as a society, to really move beyond that. And every once in a while, it raises its ugly head, like during COVID, all the anti-Asian, not just rhetoric, but actual violence. And what's happening south of the border, targeting people, raising specters, and then vigilante groups, you know, really chomping at the bit to inflict some pain, and being supported by other people in power, you know, implicitly or explicitly. So, you know, there's so many lessons that we need to learn from the recent past, and because it ain't over, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it really, white supremacy is really woven into the fabric of this country as a colonial state that is, as you said, has been and continues to be sort of the explicit goal of the state in many ways.
Yeah, and it's not just Canada that does this. There are specific racisms all around the world. There are tribalisms, there's antagonisms, there's the demonization of other cultures or religions, or, you know, whether it be class-based systems as well. So, you know, all these power imbalances are contribute towards pain and suffering of a lot of people.
Related to that, one of the instances of that through history are the 1907 anti-Asian riots here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. For people who might not know, can you just give sort of a recap of what those were?
Yeah, sure. So the riots resulted from a parade and demonstration organized by the Asiatic Exclusion League of Vancouver. It was a local, almost like a franchise of something that started off in the United States in San Francisco the year prior. So there are local chapters up and down the coast. It was hardly a new thing, anti-Asian activism. It went back to the gold rush when Chinese miners came to hopefully strike it rich, just like other men from around the world. And there were massacres, literally massacres. I think the largest one on the West Coast was in San Francisco. LA had theirs. Tacoma had theirs. In some cases, they just rounded up all the Chinese and kicked them out of town. But there were other times where just all these white men came out with their rifles and started shooting. The same thing happened with the South Asian mill workers, especially in Bellingham just 3 days before our riot here. So the Asiatic Exclusion League organized a really large demonstration to promote their agenda, but also to put pressure on the federal government to change the ways in which Asian people could come into Canada. They wanted to restrict all access from Hong Kong or China or Japan, and also India. And that's another story, but it is connected to all this anti-Asian activity. So on September 7th, they organized their first public event. It was only just over a month old as an organization when they had their first meeting. Some 400 men came out. They're all white men. including the mayor of Vancouver, Alexander Bethune, and other city councillors, clergymen. It was organized by a trade organization called the Vancouver Trades and Labor Council. Yeah, this was a first public event. Thousands of people came out for it, waving banners and flags that said Rule Britannia and White Canada Forever. It was led by the major of the military drill hall, 80 Street Drill Hall, right across from Stadium Station. There were two marching bands. The mayor and his wife was in a car. There weren't many cars back then. There was actually a cavalcade. And it made its way from, at that time, it was called Cambie Street Grounds. And now it's called Larwell Park, and the Vancouver Art Gallery's still trying to build their new building there. So they started from there, heading north to Hastings, hung a right, and then turned right again at Main and Hastings, where City Hall used to be. There are actually tens of thousands of people who came out for this. In fact, estimates go up to 25 to 30,000 out of a population of 70,000 at the time.
Wow.
Although it fluctuated dramatically as workers came in and out of the city. It was boom town, although at that time there was a depression. So all these inflammatory speeches were being made in our city hall and relayed out to the crowd. There were special guests from Seattle and New Zealand, anti-Asian activists, specialists, and the crowd got all riled up, and then a mob broke out, went to Chinatown. Everyone was in Chinatown, and the Impulse Street area was, they were already really nervous. Some people actually left town. They were so nervous. And their fears were realized when these people came down to beat them up, attack them. So everyone's already behind locked doors. No one's on the street. So they targeted very specifically the homes and businesses of where Chinese people were. They skipped the ones that weren't, or specifically white businesses. And then the Chinese started to organize. They set up patrols. They pulled out weapons. They went to the gun stores and bought up all the guns and ammunition they could. And they started to take back their street. So there was hand-to-hand combat out here, you know, along DuPont, along Main Street, like this area. It's hard to imagine, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it raged overnight. The police were caught off guard, which is kind of surprising, but there weren't that many police back then. They called out the fire department. They were completely overwhelmed by just the number of people fighting. It carried over to the Japanese-Canadian area the next day. They were prepared because they had time. Mm-hmm. So they had set up barricades and so forth. And so the fighting raged until early Monday morning. And I think one of the reasons why it stopped was it was pouring rain. So Monday morning rolls around. All the Chinese are on strike, shuts down the city. They would be on strike until Wednesday. The Japanese went to work, but at lunchtime, they all left. And then they had this big meeting outside at what we know as Oppenheimer Park. Back then, it was called Powell Street Grounds. And ironically, they were really pissed off. They wanted an apology. They wanted reparations. And ironically, the mayor had to come out and appease them. And the mayor was a card-carrying member of the Asiatic Exclusion League. And like I mentioned, he was out front and center in the cavalcade and fully supportive of the AEL. So he had to come and deal with that. Ottawa was not happy. It was embarrassing. They sent out a junior minister to conduct a royal commission. His name was William Lyon Mackenzie King. He cut his teeth on the riots.
Wow.
With his report. There's another story connected around his surprise for the demands for compensation around damages to opium factories, which led to him proposing and having passed for the first time ever Canada's Opium Act, which began the war on drugs. And there were other repercussions that led to the restricting of the number of Japanese men who could come into Canada from that point on. Eventually led to the Chinese Immigration Act. Some people call it the Chinese Exclusion Act, which resulted in almost total exclusion of Chinese coming to Canada from 23 to 47. Resulted indirectly or directly to the Continuous Journey Act, which was an attempt to keep people from India from coming to Canada, and other things. So, yeah, the riots were a big deal, and yet I didn't learn about it in school growing up, and many of our children here still don't know.
Yeah, it's something that I myself had to go and seek out myself. It's not presented in the way that you would expect it to be as something that is a pretty huge moment, not only for here, but as you're saying, sort of countrywide. Right? What would you say is the legacy of the riots?
Well, the Asiatic Exclusion League, after the big riot, they were forbidden from having any future public demonstrations. However, they remained active as an organization. They actually grew quite a bit in numbers in the late teens, early 20s. They were instrumental in drafting up or contributing towards the Chinese Immigration Act. So, they kept going. So the restrictions against non-white folks in Canada, they didn't really lift until after the Second World War. Hopefully, I think our kids in schools now learn about Japanese internment and what happened here. Something similar happened in the U.S., but what did not happen in the U.S. was they didn't have all their property sold off to fund their own internment, like here in Canada. They were allowed to go back to the West Coast, whereas in Canada, they were restricted from doing that. They had the choice of going east from the internment camps or so-called back to Japan, even though most of them had never been to Japan. So it wasn't until 47 that all Canadians got the vote, except for, again, certain designations like Dukhobors and Indigenous folks and so forth. And, it's really ironic that it took Canada's signing of this Declaration for Human Rights that came out of the United Nations right after Second World War that prompted Canada to try to be a bit more, fair?
Less exclusionary, maybe?
Yeah. So,
you said you didn't learn about this in school. How did you learn about the 1907 anti-Asian riots?
Oh, I'd probably need a hypnotist to bring me back to that moment. I don't really remember. However, I do remember the moment that I learned about the 1887 anti-Chinese riot, because it was